Here's a clock that we got for Herbie's birthday a few weeks ago, and we had to build it cog by cog. And we've yet to get it successfully working, but we've enjoyed learning about mechanisms and how cogs work and wind up things and all sorts of stuff. Sadly, the alarm doesn't work, which Jenny and I are deeply disappointed about, of course. But here's the thing. This clock at this moment is paused forever. At that moment in time, we live in a world which is hardwired to pull us out of this moment. We are being constantly called by the adverts on TV, by the phones in our pockets, by the things around us, not to live in the moment that we are in, but to always be thinking about the next thing, the next product, the thing around the corner, or looking back at the past through rose-tinted spectacles or through the murk of regrets. Living, being fully alert, being present in the moment. It's one of the hardest things to do in our age of noise and instant gratification. I say this for myself anyway. You'll probably be more disciplined than I am. Social media is filled with posts on Instagram and other social media sites with people saying things like, live in the moment, as they post a beautiful picture of a place they're staying while staring at their phone. We live in an age which takes our mind off the moment we're in and draws us looking at screens or thinking about the next thing or the newspapers or what's going on. What does it mean to be present in the here and now, in this moment, which as we are creatures passing through time, we will not get back again? How do we fully live alive with the gift of this breath and this time and this instant? We had one of my favourite readings today in the lectionary from Acts chapter 8, which tells the story of Philip. Now, Philip, we don't hear a huge amount in the book of Acts, but we have a couple of stories about his life which suggests he was a fairly extraordinary individual. And he was one of seven people. Another of those seven was a guy called Stephen, who you may have heard of. But Philip was one of seven people who, when the admin of the early church really got, became substantial, the 12 disciples kind of raised up seven to kind of be deacons, to head up the administrative kind of work of distributing the bread to people who need it and that kind of stuff. But Philip was far more than just a logistics person. He was someone who was alert and able to live in the moment he found himself in. Now, not all of us are going to have the rather remarkable experience that Philip had as we dive into our passage today, but I think there are lessons for us from how Philip responded to this story for how we are to live in an age of noise and distraction, to be fully present in the here and now. Does that sound okay? Brilliant. Well, the first thing about Philip is that he is alert enough in the moment to have encounters with God amidst the busyness of his life and all the different callings on his time and his responsibility, his professional requirements, his requirements in the early church. He is alert enough. Now, admittedly, the first encounter is with an angel face to face, which I haven't had. I don't know about you. But I think if Philip wasn't someone who was alert and responsive, he wouldn't have been able to have that encounter in the first place. So Philip has this angelic encounter, and he's told to go out onto a dusty desert road at the wrong time of year, the wrong sort of place, and to walk from Jerusalem to Gaza, and to walk on this desert pathway. And so, responsive to that moment, he does it. He gets on his sandals, and maybe his socks if he's a good Christian, wearing them together, and he walks along the road towards Gaza. And while he's there, he spots a chariot, a vehicle moving in the distance. You can picture him on this dusty desert road with the dust being kicked up in the distance. And he sees it's someone of relatively high status because of how they're traveling and moving along the road. And so Philip has a sense in that moment that the Spirit of God is saying to him right there as he's walking along, go and see what's going on with that chariot. So Philip, you know, realizes he'd better pick the pace up, so he jogs along, something deeply undignified and a big no-no for men in the ancient Near East. He runs alongside and draws the attention of the person in the chariot, who is reading aloud from the book of Isaiah, one of the great prophets in the Old Testament that spoke about one who was to come, who was to be a suffering servant, to bear the sins of God's people. And so he's reading from what we know as Isaiah chapter 53. And Philip says, "Excuse me, do you know what it is you're reading?" And this man in this moment, this Ethiopian eunuch, says, "Well, how can I unless someone explains it to me?" There's been a church in Ethiopia, a living active church, the Orthodox or Coptic Church, for almost 2,000 years. It's one of the oldest churches that's been continually in existence, and they still trace their history, their beginnings, back to this Ethiopian eunuch, to this moment. 2,000 years on, there is a lively ancient church in a nation in Africa that is still going because Philip was responsive in that moment to what God was doing. Now, there's something I think we should grasp about Philip in this moment, which is this. He was able to be fully present in the here and now because he wasn't distracted by things that had just happened or things that were about to happen in the near future, but by things that he was hoping for or things he was disappointed by. He was able to live in the moment because he recognized that he was part of a bigger story. A story that went back into the beginning of creation, God's salvation story, working its way through the scriptures that Philip had come to know and to love and to live. He was able to be present, firstly, because he was rooted in the history of how God had been at work, rooted in the scriptures. So when the moment came and the person reached out to him and said, "How will I understand what's going on unless you speak it to me?" When the person on your street you bump into says, I'm really struggling. I'm at a loss about where my life's going. Where you encounter that person in the supermarket who says, "I'm really grieving and I'm looking for hope and I don't know where to find it." When you bump into someone and they're like, I think there must be more to life than what's going on. Where have you found hope? Our village, our community is full of people asking these questions. Trust me. I speak to so many of them, and they're probably your neighbours, the people on your streets, the people you bump into at the NISA. There are people in our community crying out with the Ethiopian eunuch, saying, "How will I understand unless someone comes alongside me?" Are you rooted in the salvation history of how God's been at work in the world? So when people have the questions, you can be present in the moments and go from that source, from those roots. You can speak into their situations. But Philip was also someone, as was Stephen, his friend, who was aware of where he was going. He was aware that death wasn't to be the end of his story, that life was bigger than his 80 years that he was going to walk upon the earth. And he was able to be bold and courageous, knowing that because Jesus died and rose again, and the evidence he had witnessed firsthand, and the conversations he'd had with those who had walked with Jesus, he was able to act boldly and courageously, not defined by tomorrow, but defined by the eternal hope that he had in Jesus Christ. So Philip was someone deeply rooted in the salvation history. He was someone who had hope in his eternal future. And I think because of those things, he was able to be present to what God was doing in that moment. Our gospel reading was one of my favourites, John 15. I think of this whenever I go walking in Denbighs, and if you're visiting the area, we've got a vineyard in our backyard, which isn't bad going really for living in the south of England on a rainy day. So whenever I walk through Denbighs, I think of Jesus saying, "I am the vine and you are the branches. Abide in me, remain in me. Let me be present in your life, in your day to day." Be present in the moments. Where are the spots in your day, in your week, in your year, where there is enough space in the moment for you to be open to where the Spirit of God may be leading you, where you are alert to his presence. Now, this sounds all very abstract and religious and impossible for people with busy schedules and feral children that I have and whatever else may be happening in your life. Let me just tell you a story about a chap called Brother Lawrence. Many of you heard of Brother Lawrence? He was an amazing guy. Well, his life was a messy, complicated life. He was brought up in the mid-17th century where Europe was in turmoil. And as he came of age, he found himself fighting the 30 Years' War, which wrecked and destroyed the continents, a conflict that was brutal, and we don't know enough of often in the UK about, but it's part of our shared European history. And Brother Lawrence found himself fighting in these wars and being badly injured, so he wasn't able to be a soldier anymore. So he became a valet, a job he turned out he wasn't particularly good at. And then eventually through a whole series of events, he found himself going to work in a monastery in France. And in this monastery, he didn't join as one of the religious orders, you know, the important religious types who wear funny clothes and things like this and kind of look like they know what they're doing, the holy, reflective people. He joined as a lay brother and just worked in the kitchen. That's what he did. He chopped carrots, he washed up, he scrubbed the floor. But as the years went by, something pretty remarkable began to happen. People began to travel from far and wide to visit the monastery. And they weren't coming to visit the abbot, as impressive as he may have been. They weren't coming to visit the monks with their days of prayer and silence and solitude and all the spiritual wisdom that comes from that. And that can be the case. They were coming to seek out this everyday, ordinary, broken man called Brother Lawrence, because there was something about this man who had been through so much and spent his life chopping carrots and washing up pots and pans and sweeping the floor. There was something about the peace that was upon him, the presence of God that was with him, that was deeply attractive, that people in an age which was full of constant change and trouble and changing perceptions of identity, and the 17th century in Europe was a bonkers time where all normal understanding of how people's identities were rooted was being shaken, and the printing press had revolutionized information, and people were seeking moments of peace and hope and certainty. There was something about this very ordinary man that seemed to answer the troubles of the age. And Brother Lawrence, with the help of some of the other monks who were more literate than him, would reply to letters from people saying, how do I, in the busyness of life, seek the presence of God that you seem to have found? And a few of these letters survive, and they were then published after his death as a book called The Practice of the Presence of God. And this was Brother Lawrence's, all his experience. It's not complicated. And I find it deeply hopeful. Because all he said was this, that as he washed the pans and scrubbed the floors and went about his daily business, as he did all the things that were required in a busy family community, he'd invite God's presence into those moments. That washing the dishes, he'd invite God to be there with him. And as the years went by, he found that that presence was tangible and real. As he swept the floors, he'd invite God to be with him in that moment, abiding in Jesus. As he cooked food for the brothers, he'd pray for them. And there was something about this very ordinary man with this troubled life and this broken history where he encountered the peace and presence of God in that. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't get hours and hours of solitude in my day to contemplate the deep things of God. I love the scriptures and carve out time for them in the rhythm of my day, but I don't spend hours reading them like the brothers in that monastery would have done. But I do occasionally manage to do some washing up, or load and unload the dishwasher, or do a bit of gardening, or go for a walk with my children, or change the odd nappy, or whatever it is that's part of your daily rhythm and being. Why not try this week, in the midst of the everyday, brushing your teeth, having a shower, scrubbing the loo, inviting God to be present with you in the mucky everyday reality of life, And then maybe, just maybe, as the years go by, just like Philip, we will find ourselves alert and rooted, so that when the opportunities come where the Spirit stirs us to have that conversation, to share God's hope with someone who needs it, we may find that we are fully present in the moment, deeply rooted in God's salvation history, knowing where we are going, and able to offer peace and hope in an age of noise and busyness, which drags us always away from the moment that we are meant to be fully present in.